Hello, so this is the Lunch and Learn. I'm going to be doing a session today where I'm just answering questions. So feel free to join and send in questions, or you can ask directly. I'm going to start off just by answering a couple of questions that were put into the chat room forum. So first of all, a question about our cycles and kind of what is happening hormonally at different stages of our cycles. And of course, you know, as we're in perimenopause, our cycles can become quite disrupted and different. And so what is kind of normal, in inverted commas, becomes quite different for all of us, especially in the 2 years before you actually go through menopause. So menopause is that point where you haven't had a period for a full 12 months. So it's literally a moment in time. And normally in the 2 years before that point, that's when we find that periods start to slow down, become a bit longer between periods, become a bit more scanty. But when we are still cycling, and even when we have finished cycling, women energetically still seem to have a bit of a pattern to about a 4 to 6 week cycle. So basically, in the winter part of our cycle, that is when we are having our period, and the couple of days beforehand and the few days after. So it's about a week, normally a little bit less than a week, around the actual period. And if we kind of think of that as a starting point, in that period, that's when our hormones have really dropped right off. So the wise woman will contain her energy at that point. This is when we start to welcome in stillness, gentleness. It's great just to do yoga, stretching, meditation. It's when we can tap into that real inner wisdom, that truth, where it's brilliant just to listen in, to do guided meditations, to journal, to tap into that inner wisdom. We need to sleep a lot more now, relax a lot more, and kind of withdraw. It's quite an antisocial time. It's not a time to necessarily be out and about talking to lots of different people. So if we do look after ourselves well over the time of our periods and we don't push through, then generally the hormones start to increase quite rapidly after maybe day 3 or 4 after your period, begins. And we go into what's called the kind of spring-like stage where we start to, it's almost like an emergence, and we have this spring-like energy. And it, like I said, it really does depend on how much replenishing we have done in the in that winter phase. So if you have pushed through, if you've stayed up late, if you've had insomnia, then you're less likely to benefit from the increase of hormones after you've had your period. So, but if you have, then generally, like I said, it is slightly different for everybody, but generally that's when this week or so is when we feel like we can socialize, we have ability to go and do our action plans, we're quick thinking, we're much better at admin, we can just kind of get things done. This is a great time to start exercise programs. If you are going to go running or do a HIIT class, that kind of thing, this is the time to do it. Maybe a more dynamic yoga practice. This is a good time to begin projects because cognitively we're way more quick and on it. Our communication is pretty good, but we're a little bit more solo flyers in this stage as well. We can, though, be quite playful, quite adventurous. This is the time to kind of stretch your comfort zones. And then when we come into the middle part of our cycle, so coming up towards ovulation, these sort of middle weeks, we go into more of summer energy. If you think about that kind of languid, open, very social state, This is where we want to nurture relationships. This is where we feel like we can change the world and we want to connect in with other women in particular. We can stand in our own light. It's when we feel we can support other people best. So at this middle stage is a wonderful time to be really listening into your kids' needs. And also a little bit of flirtiness, a little bit of, you know, estrogen is peaking around this time. So you'll probably find that it's a lot easier to be social with friends as well as with your partner. It's a good time to be expressive of yourself, you know, really seeking pleasure and love, companionship. It's when we are most compassionate too. So when we have that ability to really tune into other people's needs. And this is the time to indulge your passions, to make love, to dance, just to really have that summery kind of feeling. And then after that summer phase, which normally lasts, you know, a couple of weeks, up to a couple of weeks, we then head slowly into this kind of autumnal phase, which if you think about this being that week to 10 days before your period, before we go back into that winter phase, and this is autumnal. So things are starting to slow down. This is when ideally, energetically, we are in a quite a decluttering mode. So when we're out of balance, it can become quite harsh. We can lose our ability to be diplomatic with other people, and we can instead be very sharp with our opinions and our ability to put up with stuff from the family. This is a good time to be doing power naps, to replenish the energy, just making sure you're not revving through the adrenals. It's a really good time to make sure you have healthy boundaries, what you do have energy for and what you don't have energy for. And remembering that replenishing your own energy first is the most selfless thing that you can do. So it's really good time to remember you do not have extra capacity to be giving like a colander with big holes in it. You have to kind of shore up the ship a little bit and make sure that your needs are met first. So these are these healthy boundaries. A brilliant time for brainstorming, a brilliant time for kind of getting your house in order, for kind of reflecting and healing of yourself. It's a great time to think about releasing old patterns that are not serving you. It's a great time to do some pampering, so some facials at home maybe, or you know, booking for a pedicure or something like that. So looking after yourself as we come back into the winter phase of our cycle again. So I hope that helps. There was just a question in the forum about what happens in the different parts of our cycle and what we have the energy for. So hi, if you're just joining, I was just explaining how we go through four sort of relatively distinct parts of a cycle. And even when you've stopped having periods, even if you've gone through menopause, most women still notice that there is a cyclical change to their energy throughout a four, maybe actually more like a 6 week period. But hopefully that will help just as far as knowing what kind of things can be helpful to schedule into different times of the diary. And also just makes us a lot easier on ourselves. I know before I learned this stuff, I would expect myself to have even energy throughout the month, like my male counterparts. But of course, men have so much more testosterone than we do. And that is the, you know, the go, go, go hormone. And when we are near our period, coming into our period and coming out of the period on the other side, the testosterone and the estrogen is very low. So that is a time when, you know, you're feeling tired, and that's really when you need to replenish. make the most of the beginning stage of the new cycle when you're in that kind of spring-like energy, and then going into the mid part of your cycle when the estrogen is really surging. That's when you want to be social, doing all the bits and pieces in your business and around the home. And then, like I said, as we come back again into that week or so before your periods or before your period used to be, that's when we're starting to slow right down again, replenishing the energy. So I hope that explanation helps. There was a question that came into the forum about progesterone or progestogens from the pill, and just wanting to explain the difference between those, the synthetic progesterones, and progesterone, which is what our ovaries produce naturally, which our adrenals and our brain produce naturally. And just so you do know the difference, progesterone is what we now have in modern HRT. So the brand name is Utrogestin, and it's not just used to protect the uterus. Progesterone has lots of different pathways throughout our body, primarily for helping the brain as far as staying feeling calm and collected, and definitely helping with sleep. So the pill or the Myrna coil, that is the synthetic progesterone, that's not going to have any effect on the different pathways in the body. It will simply be there to help with protecting the lining of the uterus. A lot of people didn't do so well on the pill. You know, it actually affected their moods very negatively. I was one of those people. So I didn't do very well with the synthetic version of progestogen, but I've been absolutely fine. In fact, really benefited from progesterone. So that is something worth knowing, and definitely something to talk to your trained, I put in inverted commas, trained GP in, because sadly at this point, there are not enough GPs who have been trained specifically in modern HRT and in perimenopause for women. That is changing. It's slowly changing. Anyway, Alison, hello. How are you? Nice to see you. Have you got any questions? Nice to see you, my love.
Not specifically. I'm just sort of trying to sort of gather up enough information to go back to the GP again, really, because I haven't suffered many symptoms, but I think I probably have, but never realised, sort of thing. And I do definitely notice I haven't tracked my cycles for years because I've had a Myrna coil since I was about 40, and I haven't had any periods, so there hasn't been any real need. But I do notice there are times when the energy's low, the mood's low. It was actually worse a few years ago, but even now, I went out last couple of times I've been out for a run, weren't half as good as I was about 2 weeks ago, and you think, yeah, maybe that's it, because there's no other reason. I haven't been ill or anything.
Yes.
So I do think I need to start tracking it. And the Myrna I've got is about 5 years old now, so it's probably pretty well run out. And maybe it is time to go back to the GP and say, you know, could we look at my hormones and everything else? I'm overweight, and my blood pressure and things probably need checking as well.
Well, really good idea to get a double appointment if you're seeing your GP. So talk to the secretary about a double appointment in person, if possible. I mean, if it has to be Zoom, then, you know, you've got to do what you've got to do. But double appointment, and then make sure you're seeing a GP who has been given extra menopause training. So,
yes, one of ours does have sort of women's health as a speciality sort of thing on their website. So
Make sure it's not just gynecological health, that it is actually perimenopausal health, because I found that a lot of GPs, yes, they might be like the GP who specializes in, especially in periods or in putting people on the pill, you know, cervical smears, etc., but don't actually have specific training in perimenopause. And because this is, you know, you kind of do need a GP who's able to take a really thorough history and understand all the different symptoms that you have been experiencing, or even prompt asking you, have you had this, 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 and this, and this, and then being able to educate you as well around knowing that such disparate symptoms are actually caused by hormone fluctuations and the decline of our hormones as we go into towards menopause. But yeah, it would be a really good idea just to find a GP that that has those skills and that you can build up a relationship with, because we kind of all need to have a relationship with a doctor who does know this stuff long term, actually, which is hard, especially when it means potentially spending money, which, you know, might not have. But luckily, the NHS is changing a bit, and we are kind of at the very front edge of that.
Yes, because the other thing is, you know, I mentioned on the chat the other day that I used to work for the company that made all the HRT back in the day before the Women's Health Initiative thing. And as part of their sort of, we also were making a drug for osteoporosis, and they gave us all a free bone scan, bone density scan. And mine was a bit low at the time, but I had just had two babies and done 2 years of breastfeeding. So they said it was probably down to that, but I wouldn't mind getting a GP's opinion on that as well. Which is all part of the same thing if the estrogen levels are coming down.
Absolutely.
So I need to sort of gather all my information together, really.
And so, it would be a good idea to, as you just mentioned before, about cycle tracking. So even if you're not having your periods, get a diary. So I've just got a little diary beside my bed, and then every night I try and just jot down out of 10 what my energy was like that day. And what things I had energy for. So you might be really low in energy as far as wanting to go for a run, but you might have lots of energy for having deep and meaningful conversations, for example. So that kind of tells you that you're probably coming into that mid-cycle stage, or just before you're coming into the mid-cycle stage. And at other times you might go, actually today, 8 out of 10 energy, I really felt like going for a run, or I felt like just getting a whole lot of admin done. And even if you're not cycling, that's going to be telling you, okay, well, your estrogen and your testosterone is peaking here or going upwards here. And you might find that that energy lasts for, you know, up to a week or so, and then it changes. And it's so empowering to be able to then start to understand, well, that's why literally a few days ago I was like, yay, good, I'm going to do some yoga and I might go for a, you know, fast walk and I feel good, and today I can literally not get out of bed. And it can help you understand, and then also when you go and see a doctor who is also into this kind of thing, they will also be able to get a little bit of a picture on potentially what is going on with your hormones. You know, if you're exhausted all of the time, they might want to go and test you for testosterone. They might want to get you onto some estrogen replacement. If it's your moods that are fluctuating madly and insomnia and stuff, it might be more along the lines of supplementing the progesterone. So I think that's a really important and beneficial place to start. And as far as the bone density, this is one of the things that has struck me the most, and that I'm most angry about, actually. There's a lot of stuff I'm angry about at the moment, but this is one of the things. I know somebody very well who is in her early 60s. No, she must be in her mid-60s by now. She's recently retired, and the plan was that she was just going to play a ton of golf. So she's working a bit, but she's retired mainly. Loves her golf. And then she's just found out that she's got really severe osteoporosis. And she had a few hot flushes and stuff. I think she just didn't really have too many menopause symptoms, and she, you know, kind of just got on with things and was okay, ish. So nothing bad enough that she needed to seek help. Never, ever, ever was estrogen replacement ever, ever mentioned to her. And even in her diagnosis, nothing about hormone replacement therapy in order to strengthen the bones has been mentioned. And we know that one in two women over 50, it's half of us, without replacing and bringing up that estrogen, which is absolutely essential to regenerate bone density, is going to end up with osteoporosis. So this woman I know is now terrified of moving. Like, you know, she's retired in order to play golf, and she's so scared of moving to play golf in case she breaks something. And so in her case, you know, she's got a history of osteoporosis in her family, something that probably should have been talked about earlier. So I do think it's worth us finding out more about the preventative attributes of bringing our natural hormones back up to a state where our bones get regenerated, our brain potentially gets regenerated, you know, so that we aren't in a situation in 20 years' time where we're like, why were we not told this stuff? You know, why didn't we know this stuff? We are at the very early stage of this kind of information being freely available. But it's been available for, you know, to medics for a good decade now. So, yeah, so what are your thoughts about, you know, what you know from being in the production side? And I do appreciate that with synthetic estrogen and progesterone, and sort of what you know now. What are your thoughts?
I'm not really very expert in the sort of pharmacology side of it. That's not really my thing. But yeah, it never really did make a lot of sense that estrogen from pregnant mare's urine was going to be a good substitute for natural estrogen in women.
But I think it's only quite recently, isn't it? Well, it's quite recently, a good 10 years ago, that it's the derivative from the wild yam that's been able to be changed in the lab to be the molecular same structure as what we produce ourselves. But you're right. It's like, oh, okay, so these estrogens and progesterogens, which were created from, you know, concentrated mare urine, they did a particular job, but it's always been described to me like a lock, you know, key that turns the lock as far as our reproduction system goes, but it doesn't fit the lock properly. So they don't do all the other jobs, the 400 or so other jobs that these key sex hormones are part of our whole system. Did you know
that? Yes, they could never sort of characterize it properly because it was a natural mixture, not made in a lab or whatever. So it always did feel like it was a bit of a blunt instrument.
Yeah, well, I mean, it must have been converted in the lab to be, you know, in a form
it was
that we
purified and things, but it was such a mixture of different estrogens. It wasn't just like one type of molecule. It was a real mixture. Because I can't remember, there was a load of intellectual property aspects to it as well, that it couldn't be patented because no one had actually made it. It was just a sort of natural derivative and stuff like that.
Oh, interesting. Okay, that is interesting.
But it was a long time ago now.
So. Well, the whole thing is so interesting. And it's interesting now they're trying to change the word from menopause, which makes people just simply think about the stopping of the period, and kind of brand the stage as being a hormone deficiency disorder. So helping women who are suffering with low estrogen and low progesterone recognize that, you know, just like if you need a thyroxine because your thyroid isn't functioning properly, potentially if your ovaries are no longer producing these hormones, which are very instrumental, then it's a matter of bringing up those essential hormones in order for your brain and body to function better. So massive turnaround from how I was a couple of years ago in my thinking, I've got to say. But also very aware that, you know, if you're one in 20 women do not tolerate progesterone, so even the natural progesterone, don't tolerate it at all. Those tend to be the women who also had really bad morning sickness in pregnancy, so couldn't tolerate that massive increase of progesterone when they're pregnant. And for those women, you know, they need to see a real specialist, because, you know, I can imagine being put on, it would be awful to be put on an HRT that you think is going to help you and it just makes you feel worse. That would be,
yeah,
that would be terrible.
But yes, I think there is so much sort of false information out there still, and the bad reputation of it. I've got a friend who, she'll be 50 this year, and is a doctor herself, and she won't touch it with a barge pole. And I was like,
I think also you've got to realize that, you know, like I said, doctors don't have any training in the newer HRT that is available now. So if there is still a very drummed in association from that 2002 study of a correlation with cancer. In fact, I just put in your I replied to your comment in the forum that was I listening to? Okay, so it was Dr. Nick somebody rather, who is a hormone and breast cancer specialist, world authority, and Dr. Newson was interviewing him. So it was one of her podcasts. And he was explaining to her that these days, 1 in 7, so it used to be 1 in 8, but now 1 in 7 women will develop breast cancer, whether they're on HRT or not. So 1 in 7 women will develop breast cancer. Estrogen is a growth hormone. So it helps our hair be thicker. It helps our nails stay strong. It helps our collagen be produced. It helps the muscle fibers become more elastic. You know, it helps our heart pump and our brain function, et cetera, et cetera. So if you are that 1 in 7 woman who has breast cancer in your kind of DNA, it's going to be expressed at some point in your life, probably, hope, you know, if you live long enough, then taking estrogen or using estrogen is likely to see that cancer expressed potentially earlier than it might have been otherwise. But he was explaining that because you're monitored so much more closely when you are on HRT, cancer is likely to be picked up earlier as well. So it's not like the estrogen creates the cancer, but it might make those cells express earlier than if you weren't on HRT. And apparently there is no increase in death when women who have breast cancer on HRT as if they didn't take it. So it's a sort of a shift in thinking that it's not the estrogen that is creating the breast cancer, even the old style synthetic estrogen. Instead, it is that the cells that are already there are going to proliferate or get bigger sooner, basically. But that's the understanding I had. So forgive me if I'm wrong, but that was, I thought it was quite interesting. It's an interesting and crazy minefield. Another question that came up before was about bioidentical hormones, and especially the progesterone, which is available, you know, on the internet, and you can buy tubes of bioidentical progesterone. And often this is what is prescribed through private clinics that do lots of testing, etc. And what that is compared to what you can get on the NHS, which is called body identical hormone therapy. Do you know the difference there between those two?
Yes, you were talking about it in one of the talks the other week. It came up, didn't it? I think it might be the first week.
Basically,
it's unfortunate that the two names, bioidentical and body identical, are very similar.
And it's very difficult, and I can see why people just get so confused. But yeah. Basically, the bioidentical is the hormones that have been changed in the lab to be created into progesterone, which is molecularly exactly the same as our hormones. However, it is not licensed or regulated. So it means that the tube of progesterone that you're buying off the internet may or may not have any hormones in there, or yeah. might have one lot and then not the next lot, or might have far too much in there. So you just don't know actually know what's in there. Whereas the stuff that you get through a prescription from your doctor, whether it's private or whether it's through the NHS, that progesterone, it's the same stuff. It's the same bioidentical stuff, but it's been thoroughly tested. It's regulated. So that means it's, you know, constantly tested again, and therefore it's licensed and we can get it through the NHS for our, you know, for a regular prescription kind of thing. So that's, but you're right. Body identical, bioidentical, it's quite confusing.
Yeah.
Anyway, do you have any, since you're here, do you have any physical things going on that you wanted to ask about?
Not really, but I have slacked off from my yoga over the last couple of months and I'm feeling the difference. So there's definitely a lag.
It's interesting.
I went out for a walk the other day and my sort of upper back was a bit tired and I thought, oh, this is how I used to be and I need to get back to some downward facing dogs on a regular basis and, get back to it. It is just... Yeah, finding time at the moment is a bit tricky.
Yes,
And finding space in the house as well. We're not in a very big house and we all seem to be on top of each other a lot. And we're about to have the kitchen ripped out, so that's going to make things even worse.
Yes.
but I'm still doing the hyperpressives, so
okay, great.
That's good.
You're getting there. But do go into the library. If you've only got 10 minutes or... even 5 minutes, go into the library, go to one of the under 10 minute or under 30 minute sequences and, you know, do one of those so that even if you've got enough space for a mat, that's going to at least keep you moving. I found over lockdown.
I got quite creative finding bits of space for yoga in the, doing the Zoom ones and things. The same with the hyperpressives. Some weeks we'll be needing a wall or a chair or something and I'm like I was in the yoga, grabbing my iPad and dotting about.
Yeah, moving it around. That's the beauty, of doing it at home and being able to move your iPad around.
Then I've got cats and children walking in and flipping cats.
The animal, I love seeing on screen, you know, so often dogs are jumping on people and cats are coming across the screen. It is funny.
One of my cats sees a person lying down. That's an invitation to go and sit on them.
Yes, go sit on them, squash them. Oh dear.
Other than that, I'm all okay. My shoulder's much better now that I was having problems with last year. So,
and you know, just so you know, that is an area that's being investigated quite a lot at the moment. There's quite a lot of research going into the depletion of estrogen and the prevalence of women having shoulder injuries. So because there's such a high incidence of shoulder issues and stiffness in women and, ripping into shoulder muscles, there's some studies going on at the moment. So one of the modules in the Third Age course I did was all about shoulder injuries in women. And it does seem to be a correlation between the depletion in estrogen and the muscle fibers becoming less elastic and this area which becomes very stiff quite quickly. And then of course we might go and quickly move our arms up to peg something on the line or play a bit of tennis or pull our arm back to, you know, give something behind us, and this area being dehydrated, having less elasticity, can get damaged quite quickly. That's another interesting correlation with the estrogen,
and we all spend far too much time on computers and phones and that.
Yes. this whole class this morning, actually, I did a class this morning, and we did a lot of strengthening the upper back and opening his chest muscles. Strengthening the upper back, opening his chest muscles, and I think, I remember the moment. So quite a long time ago now, just as I first became a yoga teacher, when the penny really dropped that our extensor muscles on our back are just as important as our core muscles, at the front, and we kind of need them to be evenly balanced. We can't be too tight in the front, too strong in the front, and too weak in the back. We really do need to pay just as much attention to, to those extensor muscles of the back, the little multifidal muscles around the spine, and so much of that comes through posture. So
this is another thing I've noticed is my posture has sort of dropped off a little bit again. It had got much, much better, and it's I caught myself in a, sight of myself in a shop window the other day and thought, oh, it's going again. Yeah. I really need to do something about this. But
go into the library spots. So I've got all my postural things and seated postural videos in there, so you can just go and watch those. I did a one-to-one yesterday with a lady, and interestingly, she hadn't done any postural work before, and she was really suffering with core instability and weakness. But, of course, as soon as we looked at her posture, and then when I put her into a lined posture and showed her how to sit well, she was like, oh my goodness, I can feel my core. I can feel everything switched on again. And we are designed so that our core muscles, when we are aligned, all automatically work.
Yeah.
Posture and breathing. You can't really work on your pelvic floor and your core stability without also creating that foundation of good posture. So just a little reminder there for you to do that. Oh, fantastic. All right. Well, have you got anything else that you want to bring to the table, or are you happy to wrap up here?
I think I can't think of anything particularly. But yes, I am going to sort of make my notes and go and see the doctor at some point and say, maybe I ought to have a think about this, because I think the progestin, whatever in the Mirena has sort of allowed me to sail through to some extent, but it's probably also camouflaged what's going on as well. So I haven't really realised that things are probably hormonal, and I've just sort of put them down to a bit of anxiety, maybe a bit of depression type things, but actually there's probably a bit more to it. And
I think the anxiety and the constant low mood is a big red flag.
That was cyclical. I used to think it was coinciding with the ups and downs of school terms and school holidays and things, because it was seemed to be coincide with
times, but cyclical, isn't it? Actually, if you were on a longer cycle,
6 weeks or so.
Interesting.
Because I've got no idea when my real cycle is, with having had no periods for years. I did wonder if it was just the change in routine. Wonder, because we've got all the autism and things in the family, and I maybe have a few traits myself, but I did wonder if it was just a change in routine throwing me off, but it could be hormonal as well.
And fundamentally, which is what Dr. Mandy Lionheart said the other day, and I talked to her, we are so individual, so taking notes of your own cycle and how you're feeling really is just so good and informative for you and for your doctor. But getting the basics right, i.e. making sure you get good sleep. And in midlife, we really need 8 hours plus, which is more than most of us get, and potentially doing some nana naps, but sleep's so, so important. So that difficult for somebody like me means I have to put my phone away at least an hour before bed. Just got to, because otherwise the brain gets stimulated, from the blue light.
I don't feel as though mine does, because I lights off straight to sleep every night, even if I've been on my phone, but it probably is still disturbing me.
Do you find that you wake up really refreshed, or are you waking up feeling exhausted sometimes? What's your pattern there?
I wake up. I mean, to be honest, I don't really have sleep problems at all. I wake up and I feel fine. Occasionally I wake up feeling really anxious, but I don't wake up feeling exhausted. But I do have peaks and troughs through the day.
Right.
I do get a sort of slump around tea time, and then rally again after about 9 o'clock, and then end up going to bed too late. Because I've got lots of energy late in the evening.
Yeah.
I do get a bit of a tea time after work slump. Yes. So there's definitely some sort of cycles, but I don't suffer with insomnia. It's very rarely, and it's literally lights out, fast asleep, and mostly sleep through.
Right.
I mean, occasionally need to get up and go for a wee, but apart from that,
most of the time it's okay. What about diet? Because this is one thing actually that came up yesterday, recognizing that in midlife, massively upping the above ground green vegetables, and they need to be cooked. Having lots of salad is just actually quite difficult for us to digest. But cooked green vegetables, cooked above ground vegetables, and I'm not cooking the death out of them because you want the nutrients in there, obviously, stir frying, you know, light cooking. But so much more than you might possibly imagine, and getting in vegetables throughout the day to massively increase the fiber in your diet, so that you don't have constipation, and so that your body can eliminate properly. Constipation really is so linked into estrogen dominance. So when that is just as damaging as if you have too little estrogen. So that, how's your diet as far as the green veg?
Well, I get most of it from salad, to be honest. So most of my green veg intake is salad. I would say, because I've got a family of veg dodgers.
So you have to lead the revolution on that front and try.
They're not too bad. Well, Dave's actually the worst. The kids aren't too bad. But Jenny would just exist on peas. She likes vegetables, but she just have peas every single night as her vegetable. And it's so easy to cook peas that I end up eating a lot of peas as well. But we don't do an awful lot of spinach and kale and things. I do keep those frozen blocks of spinach in the freezer and lob them into things that I'm making, because they just sort of vanish in without
any
work, which those are great, so any curry sauces and things, I do chuck a few blocks of spinach in. But stir fries and stuff sometimes, but
so that just to bring that into
at lunchtime, so and I'm trying to eat more oats and seeds and things.
Yes.
Smoothies with those things,
yeah,
blitzed in, and menopause vitamin tablets.
Okay. Well, maybe but you know,
it could be better, definitely.
Bringing that in, you know, just making that a conscious bringing in of way more. So, for example, if you in the morning were having sort of scrambled eggs, for example, a little bit of maybe one egg, but a lot of stir-fried spinach and bok choy, and having that as most of the part of the plate. So, and then lunchtime, similarly, either a salad with lots of different vegetables, but if you can, doing, you know, a stir-fry with lots of different veggies and lots of coriander and parsley and chopped up herbs on top to really increase not just the flavour but all the different nutrients, getting in some different peppers.
That I'll kind of work thing. Most of the week, so it has to be, stuff to be a salad to work.
Well, and then some tuna or something.
Quite a lot of fish and avocados, so oily fish, which luckily I love.
I hate it, but I love it. Recognizing how little vegetables we eat here in the West compared to most other cultures, and just knowing how much our body to function well really, really needs those, you know, the above ground vegetables in particular.
Matt's pretty sad. He doesn't really eat green veg at all unless I disguise it in. He eats a lot of red peppers and masses of fruit, but
that's tricky. As parents, I think we just need to model, like to work on us, and then hope that when they become adults, they've learned something through what we model.
He'll eat salads and stuff, but if you have pea shoots or, lettuce leaves and things, but But I don't know what he's eating at lunchtime at school. That's out of my control.
It's out of your remit. Oh, dear. Well, I think, you know, also just for the for this stage of life, it's really important to make sure that we are okay, and really recognizing that it's selfless to make that sure that we are okay, because we need to be here for the long term for them, and we need to have the energy to be able to be, you know, involved with their lives, etc. And like I said, it's more monkey does than monkey says. So if we are modeling eating more vegetables, going to bed earlier, you know, looking after ourselves with yoga and mindfulness and going out for walks in nature, etc., even if they don't do it now,
they just see it as normal.
Yeah, and then they will see us improving with our energy, our relationship, you know, us being less snappy, and so on and so forth. And I think that's pretty powerful for their development as well. Yeah, anyway, I'm gonna love and leave you, my friend, and I hope you have a lovely rest of the day. See if you can join some yoga next week, and maybe go and do a bit of the yoga in the tents or from the library this weekend. Space for yourself.
My daughter's got this shoulder injury, which means she's off swimming for another week. So I do get a bit more free time because I won't be
going carting her around so
much. So
because
I had to take her to physio this morning, which is why I couldn't come into the class. But it does give me a little bit more free time in the evenings. So
good. Well, and maybe go into the library and look at some of the back therapy sequences. There might be something in there that she could benefit from as well.
Well, the physio's given her a whole load of exercises to do for the next week, which are largely about getting the shoulder blades squeezed together and stretching,
strengthening that up with that.
So so she can do that.
You can benefit from those too. Do them with her. That would be good. Right. Well, listen.
Okay, then.
See you. Thank you so much.
All right. See you next week, hopefully.
Take care. Bye.